This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hour number two, rolling on here with Jeffrey Wright and company. Jeffrey Wright with George Ruggiero back in studio. I'm down here in Fort Morgan, Alabama. But no time like the present to get into the list. Let's fire it up. Zach Kleiman. All right, George, so I sat down and watched, shout out to WREG, I believe that's who put the 25-minute version of Zach Kleiman's exit interview yesterday up on, I believe it was YouTube. So, a couple of things. Number one, I think we can also acknowledge this. That's not exactly the world's easiest press conference to conduct.
No.
You know, this is a season that has fallen apart. It's fallen apart for a lot of reasons, and you're sitting up there, and you're basically being asked to give answers to which I'm not sure you have all of the answers, because I think some of these questions are probably bigger questions than maybe you have the information at this time. But the one thing that kind of struck me through it all was at times it was like, all right, here's a specific question. I'm going to give an answer of points that I think were actually good points, but they didn't exactly answer the question. And the entire time, like, I'm watching it, I just kept going, man, he's a guy that kind of sounds lost. And I don't mean that necessarily like, oh, he's lost and he can't get it back. But it's almost like when you're just, you know, I'm maybe I've got this on top of mind because I just drove down here with my wife and riding the front seat, and you know, she's got her opinion of the way that we should be going, and I've got my opinion of the way that we should be going, and you're just going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. I don't know, like, it was just, you know, like, you would go from a question about belief in the big three, and then all of a sudden you get examples of
who's a dog and who's not.
Yeah,
Jeff and I talked about this morning.
A grizzly bear. And then the other thing, that was just tough for me to ignore is, and this is not a phrase that's just popped up yesterday, but it's one that's been popping up recently, the quote, unintentionally younger.
Yes.
I don't know how to say this without coming across exclusively as a prick.
Sure.
What the hell does that mean? It's your team. Every person on the team is
here because
intentionally
you chose
there because you put them there. Like, I kind of get the sentiment. The sentiment is we did not expect for the guys that we depended on to be good, to be the guys that we were going to play. And those guys, we thought Jalen Wells was going to be a G leaguer. Well, it turns out he's playing for us. To which I would also say, I think this is another danger that this organization, particularly under Zach, has fallen into. They really buy into early returns, maybe too soon. Jalen Wells may very well wind up being a all-league caliber wing. But let's be real. Everyone is acting like the loss of Jalen Wells was maybe not as significant as losing Ja Morant, but it would have been like losing Dez. And it's like, guys, this franchise has a history of kind of buying in on people early, and maybe it was too soon. It's like watching 8 to 10 games of a quarterback and thinking you've got no issues for the next 15 years. It's like, it might very well turn out that way. It also might very well turn out that those guys will plateau.
Yeah, for a guy like Wells, though, I mean, if he plateaus at 21, especially with what could become, and I, this goes a little bit further than Zach, Kleiman, which, you know, I would assume that he is in the know of this when he talks about, you know, his players. From everything we've heard, Wells does not seem the type to rest on his laurels, you know.
No, I agree with that, but also, what if he's not that good?
That's certainly, like, possible.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
You see what I'm saying? Like, in the sense of, he was a second-round pick. Now, does that mean a second-round pick is doomed to an eternity of never being good? Well, no, that's stupid. But I would also point this out. There's a reason why these guys are second-round picks. Like, he does not have, like, a perfect resume. And, yes, he has the body type that you can believe in. Yes, his shooting skills have been something. But, I mean, think about it this way. We saw it this year. Like, he went through lulls and whatnot. And I don't know. Like, I just kind of look at it like, all right, Vince Williams, that's going to be the answer. Vince Williams wasn't the answer. No. G.G. Jackson, going to be the answer. Hasn't been the answer. I think it's kind of risky to act like, well, Jalen Wells is it. I'm not. It comes across as personal to Jalen Wells when I don't mean that. What I mean is, they keep banking on
the situation
on, like, early,
as a whole. I mean, because
yeah,
this
they
has
keep
happened.
Banking on early returns, thinking like early returns are proof of concept. And it's like, no, all early returns are was at a very specific point in time, this person was capable of doing the job. But we also, like, that's kind of the other bummer about Jalen getting hurt is we didn't get to see Jalen in playoff fires. Like, and that's another big problem. Like, this is, I think the biggest knock that you can actually say right now to Jaren's career is, why do we keep seeing yet again more playoff games where he's not living up to the expectation? Because I think early on you could chalk it up to foul trouble. He wasn't on the floor enough. Well, now it becomes this question of, is it he's not performing well under the pressure, or is it yet again we've kind of struggled to figure out the offensive scheme of having Ja have a high level of success and Jaren having a high level of success at the exact same time. But regardless, we find ourselves in this spot where, even though I'm not pointing the finger at Jaren saying, you're the reason the Grizzlies lost this playoff series, I don't find myself exiting this postseason and thinking, I feel super good about making sure we make Jaren the, you know, if not the highest paid Grizzly, the second highest paid Grizzly. Does that come across as fair?
No, that's absolutely fair. And, like, even to that point, we are talking about this team, and the media has talked about this team, especially recently, as a team that plays soft, as a team that doesn't have 16-game players. When the going really gets tough and you need 16 wins, a.k.a. the playoffs?
I'll even go one step further. I firmly believe there's enough data to suggest this team is an exceptional group of front runners.
Oh.
They're not. And I want to say this. I was proud of the effort that they gave on Saturday.
Oh,
Saturday
could have
been
the
easily could have been the lay down game. No reason not to. But at the same time, it's like there's so much evidence that suggests that when the going gets tough, this team doesn't exactly buckle down, that you can't ignore it. Now, does that mean that that's their fate forever? No, but there's clearly some type of mentality that needs to change.
Absolutely. And that's kind of where I'm leading with that is, for as good a player as, you know, we're taking Jaren, for example, I'm actually going to pick him out specifically in this because we've seen, you know, Dez is involved in this as well. But for, of the big three, Ja is the only one, it feels like, that either continues his level of play or even steps it up a bit when we get to the playoffs. Both Jaren and Dez is more of an inconsistency thing because we've seen great playoff game performances from him. But
yeah, I'm always
Jaren,
unclear
he wilts.
On Dez. Well, I'm always unclear on Dez because you and I have talked about this.
Streaky.
How much of it is just shooting variance?
Oh, yeah. But that's the thing.
Because so much of, like, how you feel about Dez's play is, like, how many shots do you hit?
Exactly. But in a way, that's his game. Period,
no, I agree with you.
Like, and that's kind of where I get stuck with this current team and with the thought process of, okay, do we blow it up? Do we, or I shouldn't say we as in you and I, but
No, does, do the Grizzlies blow
it up? Do the Grizzlies blow it up? Do the Grizzlies try and stick with this core three? Do they work in the boundary, or is there another move? And, you know, like I said, Jeff and I talked about this first thing this morning, kind of off the top was, and this has been his big point, and you've also said this, is if you decide to make that move, and any type of move there is 100% totally valid, right?
Yeah.
What are you getting?
This is kind of where Jeff and I, so we had the whole, you weren't at the station at the time, but we had the whole, I think it was after the 22 playoff season. So when the Grizzlies, I can't remember if it was maybe the summer before or the summer after, but Giannotto's whole point, he wrote a column about it was the go for it summer.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff and I even said this to Mark in real time, like, this isn't even like revisionist history. I was like, okay, and do what? Like, this is where I do have some sympathy for climate.
Yeah.
Like, I mentioned this when we were talking with Herd at the start of the show, but I'll go back to it. I think the Grizzlies are really surprised and maybe angry that Dorian Finney-Smith is not on their roster. I think they believe that they had the deal done and they were, and then those reports surfaced that weekend, and I think everybody made the mistake of thinking, oh, the Grizzlies are upset because it leaked out that they were going to trade players and whatnot. It's like, nah, I don't think that's why they were upset. I think they were upset because they thought they had the deal done, and then it got essentially reopened for after-hours trading, and someone was able to come in and swoop it. Now, I would also make this argument. I think they're fair to be upset, and I'm not even saying, like, oh, that's irrational. But one of the actual legitimate concerns that I have about Zach Kleiman is I don't think this job is just done based on value, done just based on, you know, who's getting what and in return. We can go and pick apart the Nico Harrison, Rob Pelinka, the decision to trade Luka and whatnot till the cows come home. But you know what that actually showed me more than anything? You know, part of that was two guys that had a relationship getting a deal done.
Yeah.
And one of my big fears with Zach is I don't think Zach's great at getting deals done. I think Zach has been very, very good at accumulating talent through the draft. But I think Zach has been very, very bad at any type of deal. I think if you go and you look at what are the biggest whiffs that they have, it's any type of trade. And it's either them getting the wrong end of a trade, them misevaluating a player on a trade. It's that. And it makes sense to me that that's probably the weakest part of his job, in that that's what I think is the most relationship-based part of the job. And he's on the youngest end of people in that position.
Yeah, I mean, that's, and funny enough, I was kind of curious about like what deals did happen, you know, just to remind myself as I actually have the trade deadline tracker kind of pulled up, and there are a handful of players that have swapped, you know, hands. Like, for example, when I said Dennis Schroeder, because of how good he's been for the Pistons in the series against the Knicks, I wasn't kidding. He's been, traded hands here three or four times already.
Didn't he get moved multiple times in like a week?
Yes. So I don't know how you don't or can't get in on that. As for the Dorian Finney-Smith one, you know, obviously I look at that trade. I don't know a way that the Grizzlies could have had a better offer. I mean, when you're able to get D'Angelo Russell and, you know, I understand D'Lo might not exactly be
no,
the
flashiest name. No, I think it's fair to say they
now
truly offered their best offer.
Yeah, 100%. So, but that's the thing, like not being able to get some things across the line, that's not been his forte. But
well, and also it's like, okay, the Dorian Finney-Smith is probably a bad example of the point that I'm making.
No, but it's recent, and like that like trade deal, would have made a big difference.
But like my deal is, I think another problem and another reason why they don't get deals done is I think they have a tendency to overvalue guys that they have that are on the young side. So, for instance,
yep,
if Jalen Wells is a hangup this summer, it shouldn't be. If Jalen Wells is what it takes to get a deal done, you give up Jalen Wells. Because Zach Kleiman, for me, is running into the danger of it being, Zach, I should have dealt him last summer, Kleiman. Because that's kind of when I think about all the deals. It's like, G.G. Jackson, can't deal him last summer. Can't deal him last summer. How would you feel right now, Zach? I bet you'd like to get rid of him. I bet you'd love for someone to take him off your hands.
Shoot, and he's even, like, even in the same presser, he went out of his way to essentially take some of that blame, but instead of it saying, I should have dealt someone before now, it was, man, wouldn't a guy like Jake LaRavia have been pretty nice, especially down the stretch when perimeter defense was struggling? If they had picked up the option, which that's kind of what he alluded to, he didn't allude to the trade there, but he said, we should have picked up his option over the summer.
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing is, of all his transactions, was the one that's like, I'm not that critical of him. Like, I think at the time, because you have to remember this.
Yeah.
It was very coin flippy. Jake was really struggling to stay on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
He had been inconsistent. He had started to show some promise, but he yet again had had injury problems. I think that, like, to me, it's like, that was a coin flip. I think either way, you could have come up the wrong side. Now, where I will blame them
is for flipping him for nothing.
There was still value at the end of the season. Like, they kept doing the, and I, here's the thing. It's like, let's make this assumption. Hey, Jake came into the office and said, if you're going to have these other guys pass me on the depth chart, can you trade me? That's something that happens. I don't know if it happened in this set of circumstances, but that is something I could see. Yes. It's something I could see happening. With that being said, it's your job to smooth it out and go like, you know what, Jake? Like, I we hear you, but the truth is you're still a Memphis Grizzly. You're under contract to be a Memphis Grizzly. We are in the midst of a playoff run, and we still think that there's a spot for you. And it was up to Kleiman to work these issues out. Because another issue that I keep seeing with Zach is he keeps making decisions for future Zach that today Zach doesn't have to make. Like, the same thing. It's the same thing with the Marcus Smart deal. Like, there was no reason to trade him when you did. There wasn't. Like, you could have used it. And this idea that, well, you know, we're trying to serve all these masters, is like, it's up to you to smooth out those issues. Like, that's what your job is. If the coach is not upset that the player, or if the coach is upset with the player that he shows up, it gets up to you to figure it out and to work it out and make sure everybody's on the same page. And this is just kind of where I keep going back to the whole time that I'm watching this. I didn't think like he gave bad answers. I didn't think he gave unfair answers. I just like continued to hear someone that was like, he just sounds lost. And it makes sense to me that it sounds lost because number one, I think what you're also really figuring out and you're experiencing it in real time, it's not that hard in the NBA to go from bad to good. It is really hard in sports to go from good to great. I'm not saying anything that's groundbreaking or anything that's prophetic.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's also, I think it's one of those things to, it's different to intellectually understand it's hard to go from good to great. I think it's another thing when you're in the middle of it and you're trying to do things, making your team go from good to great, and you're realizing, man, this is a lot harder than I thought. That was kind of the impression that I got from him listening to everything he had to say.
Yeah, that last point I think is more than totally fair, and kind of I think I'm starting to land on, because yes, at the very beginning, I mean, from the start, Kleiman, you know, in a way sounded defensive. Some of his questions that really could have just been simple answers started to meander. It wasn't necessarily like coach or GM speak, but it kind of got into the weeds, right?
I'll tell you what it came across to me was a defense of the record.
Yes. Oh, yes.
because a lot of it was
responding to criticism he wasn't asked about.
Correct. And now maybe it was criticism that someone would eventually asked about, but the one that this is, and Jeff and I'm sure would argue till our faces were blue, and honestly, maybe even Harrington too. I will never, ever buy the stated talking point that Zach is not a part of, I don't know if you want to call it the coaching universe, the coaching zeitgeist or whatnot. Someone needs to figure this out for me. It is very difficult for me to accept your behind the scenes explaining things away of, well, listen, it's not my job to coach the team. That's on Taylor. That's on Taylor. That's on Taylor. Why the hell do you sit right behind the bench? How many GMs sit right behind the bench? And you can't tell me that's coincidence. I know how many suites are sold. There's plenty of good space up top. Why are you sitting there? I do not buy that talking point. That was spin zone from Zach to take the heat off Zach because Zach does believe in the whole collaborative coaching process.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, in a way, even the pick of a guy like Isolo, from what we've seen, is a guy who likes to have that collaboration, likes to have that back and forth between not just his players, but also his assistants, top to bottom. How many times did I mean, because I, whenever I do end up working at these games, have a great view of the Grizzlies bench, as in...
You basically are looking right down.
I am right behind it. I can see. I was just staring at the back of Kleiman's head the entire game on Saturday. Every single time they'd go to a timeout or go to a TV timeout, what would they do? Isolo and his assistants would huddle up at around center court or, you know, right around the three-point line, talk things over, come up with something, and then they'd go back and talk. And how many times did I see players also often responding, nodding, talking back to Isolo? Not, obviously, I don't mean that in like a bad way, but in a way that they are clearly communicating about what they're talking about. It's a conversation. It isn't, hey, I'm laying down the law, it's this or nothing. It's very clearly a guy who fits that mindset, that culture.
And I think that's the question. It's like, is that what they need? Because that's the other thing. Like, Zach's kind of, it sounds like, well, we're going back to the drawing board, and I don't feel like we got a great answer. I guess it felt like the official stance. Yeah, it feels like the official stance is like, we're going to do a coaching search and Tuomas is under consideration. Is that how you interpreted it?
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't think that's unfair. I mean, if we're asking them
I want to be very clear. I don't think that's unfair, but it's always going to invite the questions of if Tuomas gets the job full time. Was this a predetermined coaching search? And I really would stress this. If their plan is this year sucked, a lot of things went wrong, we made some mistakes, but we still believe in this core, which I don't, okay, let's go to the answer to Drew's question.
Yeah.
From this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Because it went from, he didn't make points that I disagreed with, but it just felt like it wasn't answering the question about the big three.
Oh, he didn't answer the question.
To the point that I was like wondering is like, was that like an admission of like, we're listening to offers? Like, I how did you interpret it?
My first, like, immediate thought, and I'm talking, I got to this point in listening to that clip answering Drew's question. It was about a five.
Yeah, it was the
response.
Longest answer, I think.
I'm talking midway through. I'm like, he's not going to answer this question straight up. There's no way he actually answers the question, and he didn't. I very much interpreted the answer, the response, as trying to skirt around the fact that he might be listening to all. I mean, but to that point, and you and I kind of just talked about it, his big issue has been not getting deals done or not being able to get things over the finish line. Even if it was any other GM or any other team in the league, that was going through the same type of situation, mind you. I'm not talking about like a Luka situation. I'm talking in this type of scenario, would we not want our general manager to, at the very least, hear things out? Because the worst he can say on hearing something out is, hey, sorry, we're going to stick with our guys.
Yeah, so I guess this was my interpretation of it. I think he very clearly established we're in the Ja Morant business. Like, 100%. My takeaway from that was we're committed to Ja, because he even kind of like gave, included in that there was some type of response that was basically like, we think Ja has grown this year. We like where our relationship is with him. Everything's good. That almost felt like a, we are doubling down on the point of everyone that wants Ja Morant, that's a fantasy. Okay, that's fine. That's fair. Like, I actually think that's a reasonable position to take, because I think if you put Ja on the trading block, I think this is not the time to do so. Like, I acknowledge that.
Yeah.
But what was weird to me was then it kind of turned into, what do you got? And to answer your specific question of, isn't that what we want to hear? I think, yeah, you want to know what the market is. I think that's a fair point to make. But I guess my hesitation is, I think we make the NBA and fan culture around the NBA is such that a big part of being a fan is kind of being a de facto fantasy GM.
And well, for us, that's every sport.
Yeah, and I'm not saying, like, I'm not telling you how to be a fan.
No, of course. Yeah.
What I'm saying is, my caution on that is, if you are, what's clear to me right now in the NBA is, when you put your proven good players on the market and you are selling, if you're selling for picks and future assets, that's a decent way to go about it. But that is a complete, utter rebuild.
Yeah.
If your idea is, we're trying to flip players to get a different collection of players, more times than not, the player that you end up trading is usually worse than the player that you get back, or a worse fit than the player that you get back. And so,
cautionary tale, I guess, is that what the Suns, it feels like the Suns have been doing.
The Suns, I mean, I guess you could make the argument when the Bucks and the Celtics, like, they've made deals where it worked out for them, but, like, I also kind of think, all right, you got to kind of put the Bucks title into context.
Yeah.
The Bucks took advantage of the bubble, ran super late, and then we came back and we tried to play a normal-ish season.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Bucks were one of the teams that didn't have to play all the way through, you know, the middle of October or whatever, September, wherever it was that we went. And they were one of the teams that, like, if we look at the teams that played deep into the bubble, most of them ended up having early exits or not even making the playoffs the next year.
Miami floundered. So,
put some context there. And then the other flip side with, like, the Boston deals is, like, how much of it was really just Kristaps Porzingis was available for the cheap and they happened to be the beneficiary? But, like, more times than not, when you end up trying to flip a Jaren Jackson, you're probably not getting as good of a player. And so this is where, like, I acknowledge this is a difficult process. But the problem that I see is that if your answer is, and maybe you will be proven right, and that's the other flip side. Like, I'm willing to sit there and acknowledge, like, I don't have the answers, but I just think it's a very dangerous business proposition to go. You're asking your fans to sit there and go, we're going to be better. Tuomas is going to be our coach, and you're just, I'll say this, you're not going to sell many season tickets. And if that's the number one concern, like, I understand that. People point out, like, well, that's not winning. It's like, yeah, but that is a part of this.
Oh,
like, give something to hope on. Like, if the fan base, I think, is going to be remarkably apathetic if the Grizzlies show up next year, Tuomas is the head coach, and largely the team is what we've seen.
Agreed. And funny enough, as you know, you and Coach earlier were talking about the potential coaching search. I went around the league and kind of was looking. like, gosh, what other assistants are out there? What things have I heard? Nothing really inspires me that much, honestly. Like, I like the idea of Sam Cassell, but he hasn't done it. I like the idea of that. I like the idea of Mike Brown.
Let's stick with Cassell, because I mean, you are right. Like, it's one thing to be an assistant and then be a head coach. Like, see Fizdale, David.
Jeff Van Gundy's out there. He's doing things.
Feels like Van Gundy is. No, I mean, like, listen.
You want experience, baby.
On the idea of Van Gundy, I just think that Van Gundy is. Something tells me he's got his eye on something a little bigger.
Oh, 100%.
And when I also say I think somewhat informed has his eye on something a little bigger.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But is Sam Cassell really any less prepared than Tuomas is? Like, Tuomas has been a head coach. That is one thing. But does being a head coach in Europe translate to being a head coach here? Maybe. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm willing. I want somebody to, like, tell me, like.
We've never seen it before, have we?
I mean.
Darko?
Blatt. I don't know if Blatt was necessarily Europe. Look up David Blatt's. Like, I know
he coached in Israel, didn't he?
I know it was the Israeli league, right?
I'll double check that, but I'm pretty sure. Let's see, David. Well, that's where he is now. He went back to Tel Aviv. He coached in Russia a handful of years. And then. I mean, yeah, kind of, but he spent the majority of his time coaching in Israel, not in Europe.
Right, and like, I don't know, is David Blatt a success story? I mean, what, he had 18 months?
He got from, yeah, realistically, 2014 to 2016 with the Cavs, and that's it. Right after that, he went to, I can't pronounce that, where is that at? Turkey.
Okay.
So
are they playing in the whatever the Euro League? Because that's always the weird thing about Turkish teams.
That he went to, I don't believe so. I'm not even going to try and pronounce that name. I don't want to be disrespectful.
But I guess this would be my answer. Like, as we talk it out amongst ourselves.
Yeah.
Nobody else has given him another chance.
No. I mean,
and in a league where retreads happen all of the time, no, not even another whiff.
I mean, we talked about it with the Bucks. Adrian Griffin came to mind, but he also hasn't been given another shot. So to me, that sounds like it was more than just the Bucks didn't like him. He hasn't even gotten an assistant job somewhere else. I'm with you. I don't think Budenholzer, you know, inspires much, especially after moving on from Jenkins, who was Bud's protege.
Like, I think if you're going to do the retreads, the ones that would probably get people excited.
I like Mike Brown.
I think Mike Brown. And again, I've been very clear. Do I think Mike Brown's the greatest coach in the world? No. But I do think Mike Brown is like, I've always made the joke. Like, I think he's NBA Buck Showalter. Like,
I think he got a bad shake in Sacramento.
I think he got a bad shake in Sacramento. But like, I think it's proven, like, is he going to maybe take your team to the mountaintop? No, but you know what he's really good at is taking a team and getting kind of the most out of it.
Yes.
And maybe it wears thin on people. Like, it doesn't last forever. Like, I acknowledge that. But I do think if you realize you're going to get into this position where you're not going to be able to really shake up the roster that much, you've got to do something that signals this is going to be different. And to me, at least, the Mike Brown type would signal this is going to be different. I honestly think Sam Cassell would kind of do the same thing. I get it. We have the same questions about it. But it's like, man, at least like if Sam Cassell were coming in, A, it's a name that most people would recognize. I'm not saying that should be the only thing that matters.
Sure.
But I do feel like, I don't know, wouldn't you be a little bit more interested and excited in the Grizzlies if everything was the same but Sam Cassell's the coach than if everything's the same and Tuomas is the coach?
Well, in that case, literally everything would be the same. That's, I think, part of the problem there.
And you just acknowledge that what happened this year is not good enough. And I
100%.
I'm also in the camp of, like, I know this is not Tuomas' fault. But, like, I do think you have to acknowledge, like, there's clearly some form of a reset that needs to happen.
Yes.
Agreed. And what does that look like? All right, we are running up into it. We got to talk a little draft. So let's take a break. We'll talk the draft. We'll discuss what I think the biggest problem with Shador was. I've got an answer. I'll tell you what I think when we come back right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, George, so we had the NFL draft finally conclude, and lots of good takes out there. But, of course, the biggest story of the draft is how does Shador Sanders fall all the way to pick 144, fifth round? And I'm going to take up for the draft analysts, the mock guys. I didn't see a ton of people. Let me say this. I saw a lot of people that said Shador's not going in the first round. Would you not agree?
Yes.
It wasn't exclusive, but I saw a lot of people that were saying he's not going in the first round.
I saw plenty of that, for sure.
Now, I think the complication becomes is a lot of people, and I think they did this because I think the evaluation was as such, which is we don't think he is a home run first round pick, and from a talent perspective, we're mainly just talking arm strength talent. Mm-hmm. Like that's it. I think from an accuracy, from an athleticism, like I think a lot of those things he would have been good enough. But I think the single biggest problem that Shador had, he doesn't have an agent. And
I think
I was watching, it was after we were packing, it was late night after the second, third rounds on Friday. And in the midst of, because I don't know what everybody was watching. I know a lot of people were watching Mel Kiper meltdown. But I was watching the NFL Network conversation. And at one point, I don't remember if it was Jeremiah. I don't remember if it was Joel. I don't remember if it was Charles. So their desk is Rich Eisen, Joel Klatt, and Joel, a Colorado guy.
Yep.
And obviously somebody that has done a lot of Colorado games. And then Daniel Jeremiah, their main draft guy, and then Charles Davis, who's kind of like the NFL analyst that, you know, has his foot in kind of both doors, both NFL and college. But just as an aside, someone goes, who's Shador's agent? And I believe it was Rich that goes, I don't think he has one. And then Joel goes, yeah, they represent themselves. And to a certain degree, I think you can understand it, but yeah. Here's where I think it only makes sense. If you're talking about Deion's done playing. If you want to say Deion doesn't want to have an agent and Deion wants to represent himself, he doesn't want to split the commission with everyone. He thinks that he has enough relationships from the business world, from the entertainment world, that he doesn't think it's necessary. I'm cool with that. That makes sense.
Yes.
Like that makes all the sense in the world. But here's where I think it was a crucial mistake. I think their explanation would be this. Rookie salaries are slotted. So it's not like having a better agent is going to negotiate a better deal. You kind of know what the deal is based on where you get drafted. Mm-hmm. And I would say that is true. But the biggest mistake, and this is where even Deion not having an agent really came back to hurt, they did not have the person that was working for them that was also telling them, hey, we got to do some things a little differently. Like, we believe in – that doesn't mean like, oh, you don't believe in Shador? No, I believe in Shador, but here's what they're telling us. Shador's not interviewing very well. And where an agent helps is when maybe you don't interview very well, you smooth it over with the team. Because this guy's got to he's got to do business with players and he's got to do business with teams. But more importantly, I think the biggest mistake they made was they thought Shador is either going to be the first quarterback or the second quarterback, and he is in a different tier than everyone else. I think what they would have found out very quickly is you can say people are wrong, and that's fine. You are definitely entitled to that opinion. The problem is the agent would have convinced them, guys, they don't see us as in another tier. So maybe when it gets to the combine and Jackson Dart's throwing, Jalen Milroe's throwing, Tyler Shuck's throwing, Maybe we got to start throwing, and maybe we got to start treating these interviews a little differently. Hey, maybe instead of like perhaps sandbagging some interviews, as Jonathan Jones from CBS suggested that they did, maybe we got to start treating it like Jackson Dart is, which is every single team he's trying to put his best foot forward, and we never know who's going to like us, and maybe we got to go that way. But to me, the biggest mistake they made, they did not have an agent, and they did not have someone to smooth over the issues with the teams that happens frequently. Because let's be clear what Shador's red flags are. It's nothing criminal.
Oh, no. Not
He's
at all.
Got an ego. Cool. Guess what every other quarterback does? Has an ego. Now, the mistake that they made was they overplayed their position. They thought they were in a different tier than what they were. And then, as he continued to slide, you fall into the Tim Tebow category, which is this. When Tim Tebow got cut by the Broncos, it was very obvious from a talent perspective, he was good enough to still be in the NFL. But you know what every team decided? He's not good enough to be our starter, and we're not going to deal with the number one topic of conversation being our backup quarterback. And that's the spot that he fell into.
Yeah, and I, to me, that's probably the most realistic and probably the best explanation for the type of slide that Shador experienced. I mean, obviously, there's a ton of other things aside from just the slide that we can talk about.
Also, you could make the argument, if he were supremely talented, but like I'm not under the impression... I don't think Deion sits there and goes, Shador is, when you put him like on the radar gun, I don't think Deion thinks Shador's a guy that throws 95 when he throws 86. I you know what I mean? I think he
I don't think he's unrealistic
that.
About it.
Yeah, but yeah. I do think that their mistake was they believed that he was in a different tier than he was, and they didn't have an outside person to advocate for them, but also to get them in a different frame of mind. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll tell your story next, right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, George, for today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story. I'm going to preface it by saying this. Do I think Jeff Ulbrich's son was an idiot for making prank phone calls and filming it to prospects? Yes, I do. But this is also ridiculous. Matthew Berry, of course, of NBC. No action.
No.
Ridiculous.
I think I saw this.
And this BS statement from Atlanta isn't strong enough. Shame on the entire Ulbrich family. Whatever you think of Shador, everyone deserves to be treated with respect. The fact that we are literally making this be like, why is he not charged with a felony?
That's kind of wild.
It's absurd. It's absurd to me. By the way, if you can't tell that a 17-year-old making a prank call is not an NFL GM, I kind of have to question your decision-making in the pocket. Just me. I'm just going to take a spin zone there. All right, my man. I appreciate you for holding the fort down back there in studio. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Want to thank George for doing all that for us. For Munz, who joined the program. For Coach Hurd, who joined the program. For George, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.